complex was located. One soldier was also said to have been killed as a result. The Syrian military said the air defense confronted what it called hostile targets in the sky around Damascus. Rights groups said the latest Israeli strike was the deadliest in the Syrian capital since last month, when another missile attack targeting Damascus International Airport left 4 people dead. The latest attack, like usual, drew strong condemnation from Damascus. The Syrian Foreign Ministry called the strike a crime against humanity. Iran and Russia separately condemned the attack. Iran's Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani slammed the West's, quote, shameful silence over repeated violations of Syria's sovereignty. Kanani called on the UN Security Council to react to the latest attack by Israel. Russia also called the assault a flagrant violation of international law. Moscow warned of what it called dire consequences for the region. The Israeli assault came days after over 50 people were killed in an ambush carried out by Daesh terror group in Syria's central desert province of Homs. Syrian media said the bodies of all victims taken to a state hospital had gunshot wounds to the head. The recent attacks carried out by the Israeli regime and the Daesh terror group come at a time when Syria is grappling with one of the deadliest earthquakes of all time in the history of the country. So far, nearly 6,000 people have died in Syria's recent earthquake. As the Syrian Foreign Ministry put it, at a time when Syria was trying to heal its wounds, bury its martyrs, and receive condolences, sympathy, and international humanitarian support in facing the devastating earthquake, the Israeli entity launched an air aggression targeting the civilian-populated residential neighborhoods in Damascus. Faisal Miqdad called on the United Nations Secretariat and UN Security Council to condemn the regime's aggression and hold it accountable for its crimes. Syria has been repeatedly complaining to the UN over Israeli repeated assaults, urging the Security Council to take action against Tel Aviv's crimes, but those calls have all fallen on deaf ears. The international community has failed to take a single action in at least condemning such attacks. That comes to the spotlight, especially at a time when the United States maintains its occupation of Syria's eastern oil-rich provinces to steal the country's reserves. There are reports that the Americans load tankers and trucks with oil and wheat and send them over the border to Iraq. The U.S. occupation of oil-rich Syria, the Daesh terror attacks there, and the repeated Israeli missile strikes against the Arab country all take one to the conclusion that Washington and its allies still haven't given up in trying to destroy Syria. Not only one cannot expect any condemnation from Western countries with regards to the matters, there seems to be no international community who would want to do anything. After all, their interests lie in not taking any action. All in all, what seems to be crystal clear is the fact that Syria is still being punished for stopping the plans of those who wanted to create a new Middle East. That makes it even more auspicious when countries which were once hopeful of establishing a new government in Damascus are now normalizing relations with Syria.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
From baby formula to medications and childcare, American parents feel strain of shortages. Low-income parents, in particular, may not have the resources to navigate the layered crises. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Throughout wrote in this regard, it's a familiar modern tableau. American parents standing in front of bare shelves where infant formula and children's medications were once stocked. Shortages like these can happen in any given year. But supply chain disruptions and pandemic shopping patterns have caused a confluence of shortages for parents and caregivers. After several difficult years that have unmoored people's professional and personal lives. The formula shortage has been ongoing since February 2022, when a Michigan factory closed down following a recall. Supplies of children's Tylenol and Motrin dropped in the fall when cases of COVID-19, flu, and respiratory virus RSV shot up. That shortage lingers into this year. Adderall, the medication primarily used to treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which is usually first diagnosed in childhood, is still in shortage. So too is the antibiotic amoxicillin, according to the Food and Drug Administration. For American parents, the mental and emotional load of navigating all these shortages has only grown. Audrey Goodson-Kingo, the editor-in-chief of Mother Honestly, a platform for working moms, said, "It's a combination of time-consuming and mentally draining that is putting an amazing burden on working parents. It's a question of, do you want to spend your time or do you want to spend your money? You're going to spend something." Dr. Deborah Greenhouse, a pediatrician in Columbia, South Carolina, has been managing the compounding shortages for a year. It all started with formula and then was followed by the shortage of amoxicillin. When it was clear the antibiotic was in short supply, she started prescribing other antibiotics, Greenhouse said. It becomes a cascade. The more you have to use something different, the more you fall into shortages of all of them, until you get to a point where, literally, it is almost impossible to find children's antibiotic suspensions. And that is still largely where we are now. Her practice has been working to identify pharmacies that are more likely to have children's medicines in stock and are spending paper prescriptions when they can to help parents have something on hand in case they do run across a pharmacy that has the medication their child needs instead of waiting for their doctor to send it electronically. But with Adderall, that's not really an option. The challenge there is heightened because the drug is controlled substance. During the pandemic, relaxed rules allowed doctors to prescribe controlled substances using telehealth, waiving an in-person requirement. That, combined with more attention on ADHD and its symptoms, particularly as parents and kids were at home, led to a rise in the number of prescriptions for Adderall. Higher demand with only limited supply is the perfect recipe for a shortage, and other factors may be at play too, including COVID-19 labor shortages. A shortage of Adderall hurts kids especially. About 10% of children aged 3 to 17 have been diagnosed with the disorder, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. You really do get into this awful situation where you send the prescription into the pharmacy doesn't have it. The parent has to call around and find the prescription and then call us back. We have to send it again. It is incredibly time-consuming, Greenhouse said, adding, At the end of the day, the person who is getting the worst of it is the child. It may take days for the family to find it, and the child is struggling in the meantime. Greenhouse's office fields calls from angry parents daily who can't find what they need for their kids. If we spent the amount of time necessary to find all the prescription medications for our families right now, we would never see another patient. We would literally be sitting here all the day on the phone talking to pharmacies, she said. In January, Christian Mariano's two sons were sick at home with a cold and strep throat. At her grocery store pharmacy, she grabbed the last children's pain and fever reducer left on an otherwise empty shelf. Her sister-in-law nurse couldn't find any Tylenol or any other brand for her three sick daughters. A fellow nurse gave her some she had at home. Ever since the pandemic started, obviously, we are all kind of used to random things being out at the grocery store now, including in the medicine aisle. But this was mind-boggling, said Mariano, who lives in New Jersey, adding, the emotional labor has gone into it is definitely very high. Mariano considers herself lucky she was able to find what she needed, but there are families in the U.S. who have neither the means nor the time to drive around from store to store. Their job might not offer that kind of flexibility, or they might not have the resources to spend on gas or purchasing alternates of certain medications. Low-income families are the majority of those who purchase formula, and they have continued to experience the shortage as other parts of the U.S. have rebounded. In the coming months, ease regulations that were put in place to help those families access baby formula with government assistance will expire even as the shortage continues. Greenhouse, the pediatrician, said half of her patient population is on the Medicaid, but and a portion don't have insurance. The families with private insurance and with resources have the ability to get to a pharmacy that's maybe 15 or 20 minutes away. They have the ability to get that medication that has a higher copay, Greenhouse said. Your child who has Medicaid or who has no insurance, if the medication isn't available, they may not be able to get access to the medication that is available if they cannot afford out-of-pocket cost. For people in the bottom 10 to 20th percentile of incomes in the U.S., even having the financial stability to search for alternatives when a shortage does pop up is the first hurdle. Low-income jobs typically offer less schedule flexibility, which parents have relied on to search across cities for medications or baby formula. Those jobs also have fewer benefits like sick leave, which some parents have used to help care for their kids when they were unable to find medications or health insurance, which has helped parents switch to different and often more costly drugs when one is in short supply. There are four people for whom inequality is so deep that the impact of the shortages is more intense. Most of those people are women who make up the majority of low-income workers, and particularly women of color. About 80% of single-parent households are led by single mothers, and more than half are led by Black moms and Latinos. Earlier, Guardian had reported a baby formula shortage sweeping the U.S. that has triggered a political crisis for Joe Biden is continuing to distress parents, caregivers, and medical professionals as they still find the vital product difficult to obtain. Reports of the shortage troubling intensive care units for newborns, as well as creating a black market for the scarce product, are still proliferating across the U.S. media despite a concerted effort at the highest levels of government to get a hold on the crisis. Reports of babies being rushed to emergency rooms after consuming homemade or diluted formulas show the importance of proper nutrition for infants, especially those with special dietary needs.
Aperture. Welcome back to Aperture, everyone. First part of the documentary witnessed the rise and fall of gold used as currency throughout human civilization, from first gold coins in Lydia to their dominance of over 1,000 years in the Byzantine Empire. But what role does gold play in the modern international economic arena? And how has it made a comeback after the dollar took over for about half a century?
Under the gold standard, in which money is issued based on the reserved gold, the prices of commodities are more stable because the government cannot simply issue more money. Also, trade deficits remain under control. Trade deficits under the gold standard refer to the effect of domestic gold transferring over to other countries due to an increase in revenue. If there is less gold, less money is issued. With less money, consumption and income automatically decrease. Export relatively increases, and the country sees a surplus in trade. Under the gold standard, the value of money is very stable unless the amount of gold drastically increases. However, because of this, the gold era collapsed. The gold standard, in which issued money is tied to gold. When the economy began to grow rapidly, thanks to the Industrial Revolution, the amount of money needed to grow as well. However, because of the limited amount of gold, sufficient amount of money could not be issued. This problem became more evident during World War I. Countries that participated in the war had to issue large sums of money to fund the war. One by one, they began to discard the gold standard. The gold standard faced another crisis during the Great Depression. As countries began to exchange foreign currency for gold in fear of the never-ending depression, it led to disputes over gold.
As it has endured, we'll revive and will prosper.
In 1933, President Roosevelt nullified the gold standard, and more countries began to discard it. After World War II, the world's gold gathered in the U.S., and the gold standard was gradually disappearing. In 1944, each country's representative gathered in Bretton Woods, USA. 44 countries participated, but it was actually a battle between England and the US, and in the end, the US won. Since then, the dollar became the key currency of the world. It was a defining moment for the US, as it became the empire of finances. However, during the Vietnam War, the dollar faced a crisis. More money was issued to fund the war, which led to increased prices and deficits. When the value of the dollar plunged, each country began to ask for gold conversion. It was the first crisis that the dollar had faced. In 1971, U.S. President Nixon declared the prohibition of gold conversion. He no longer allowed exchanging dollars for gold. Along with the Nixon shock, the era of gold ended and the Bretton Woods Agreement collapsed. The financial system in use today is the result of the Nixon shock. The U.S. is still home to the largest economy, maintains the dollar as the international currency, and other countries put their destinies in the hands of the dollar. The U.S., which had abandoned gold, now had the power to issue as many dollars as they wanted. The Asian financial crisis in 1997 that drove Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Korea to the edge of a cliff was the result of the U.S. recklessly issuing dollars. The reckless printing of the dollar can threaten any given country. This is all possible because of the absence of gold as a standard. The gold and the dollar, which were linked together at one point, now were on diverging paths. The ups and downs of civilizations and currency have a special relationship. If a strong civilization appears, its currency becomes strong as well, and if the currency value falls, the civilization also wanes. Whether they were coins or paper money, overissuance of money always led to the collapse of an empire.
A powerful government means powerful economy. The reason why the government is powerful because the economic system is so strong and the people work hard, make money, pay the tax. So the government can get more and more tax, which has a lot of wealth and a lot of spending power, which keep the government strong, keep the country or empire strong. But why such system can have a stronger economy compared to others? I think money is a big issue. It's a very important.
Ancient Rome is the representative case where the empire's history followed the ups and downs of currency. Once ancient Rome expanded to the Mediterranean Sea, the circulation range of the currency did as well. The expansion of the local currency led to stronger national power through the acquisition of local resources. Periods of stable prices and a booming economy coincide with the peak of the Roman Empire. In 54 AD, the peaceful reign of the Roman Empire ended under Emperor Nero. Nero reduced the amount of gold used in coins and made thinner, smaller ones. His successors also degraded the coins, and the value of money plunged. The currency system completely collapsed, and the government had to collect taxes through goods and services instead of money. The strong empire had reverted back to the time of the exchange of goods. In 476 AD, the thousand-year-old civilization of the Roman Empire collapsed. Even after the collapse of the Western Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire continued to flourish and survived for another 1,000 years. The secret to the survival of the Byzantine Empire, despite frequent battles, was the bezant, the Byzantine coin. However, after the Crusades, even the value of the bezant plunged. In 1453, the Byzantine Empire fell when the last bezant was used up. The Byzantine Empire disappeared along with the bezant, and the Ottoman Turks became the rulers of a new empire. The special relationship between the fall of a currency and an empire can also be seen in China. During the Bukong dynasty, people in Sichuan made coins out of iron. At the time, about 20,000 iron coins were needed to buy a roll of fabric. A carriage was needed just to buy a roll of fabric. So in order to solve this problem, the world's first paper money, Gilja, was invented using iron coins as collateral. However, 100 years later, due to the government's over-issuance of money, the world's first paper money disappeared. Once the currency system collapsed, the Song dynasty lost its military and political power and collapsed under the Mongolian invasion. The Yuan dynasty that watched the Song dynasty's fall issued gyocho, based on silver, and created a stable currency system. However, the problem was the endless wars. Every time it faced financial difficulties, the government overissued gyocho, and the currency system collapsed. Once the currency system collapsed, the Yuan dynasty fell like all other empires. The national crisis shook the trust in currency, and the failure of the currency system led to the collapse of an empire. A strong currency and a strong empire were the two pillars that drove history. New York, USA. The Federal Reserve Bank on Wall Street houses the world's largest gold safe. In the 122 gold safes that are located 24 meters underground is gold that other governments, central banks, and international organizations entrusted. After the gold standard disappeared, gold that lost its place to the dollar disappeared into the dark. Then, what backs the value of currency? It's the world's key currency that is the foundation of international trade and transactions. The source of that power is in national strength. The British pound dominated the world's economy for 100 years, and then the US dollar took over. It was the result of the currency war among nations.
Oftentimes, over time in history, you find that as countries change in their economic power, the UK and then the US, reserve currencies change. But I think we're moving to a world where there's a lot more engines of growth, and it makes sense to have multiple reserve currencies. So this is a function not just of the United States, but really of the changing world economy. But it does mean, though, for the United States, if other currencies are used as reserve holdings, then there will be a relative fall in the demand for the dollar as a foreign exchange reserve holding, and that's worrisome if the U.S. has a lot of debt to sell.
The Byzantine bezant, 700 years. The British pound, 100 years. These are the number of years these key currencies dominated the world. Then how much longer will the dollar rule the world? People's fantasy about the dollar shattered in September 2008. The financial crisis that originated from the U.S. left the world in fear, and people immediately rushed to obtain gold. The moment greed turned to fear, the emperor, sleeping in the dark, awoke from its slumber. After 40 years of sleep, gold has returned. The price of gold rose 22 times in 2010, which is a record within a given year. Now the world is rushing out to buy gold. The central banks of each country bought 216 tons of gold just in the first half of 2011. The price of gold is skyrocketing, and the US and the dollar is plunging endlessly.
Even before the financial crisis, there were trends underway which made it likely that the US would not play as dominant a role in international finance as it has in recent decades. You had the creation of the euro, a currency for a very large economic area, and the euro was beginning to play a larger role. In addition, you've got the emergence of China, already the second largest economy in the world and growing very rapidly, that makes it natural that over time, as Chinese financial markets develop, as they open up their capital markets, then I think we will see the renminbi play a larger role as well.
Just as it defeated England at the Bretton Woods Conference, defeated France via the Nixon shock, put Germany and Japan under control, will the US be able to win the currency war once again?
Well, the United States is now in relative decline to the rest of the world. As you probably know, the 19th century was the century of the UK. It went into decline during the 20th century, and it's no longer anywhere near the major economy in the world. The 20th century was the century of the US. We're now in relative decline, too. The largest creditor nations in the world now are China, Korea, Japan, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Singapore. The assets and the money, the wealth, is in Asia now. The United States is the largest debtor nation, not just the largest debtor nation in the world, we're the largest debtor nation in the history.
Once the US, the financial empire built on debt and the power of the dollar began to shake, the world began to debate about the new key currency. The one that's receiving the most attention is gold. that it has returned after 40 years. Is gold the omnipotent currency that will bring stability back? Or is it just a mirage?
Well, the fundamental dilemma for somebody that's thinking of holding gold is that gold does not produce an income. Now, I mentioned art. Art does not produce an income, but it gives you a mental income. It gives you a psychological income. Common stocks, equities, or bonds, they give you a financial income. Gold doesn't do that. What gold does do is it gives you some security.
So as it stands today, we think gold is undervalued by a pretty good margin. We don't know if 10,000 is the target, but we do think that the difference between $1,500 and $10,000 an ounce represents the degree of inflation, true inflation, that we've seen in the currency. Now, if we were to use the same formula that we used from 1945 to 1971, the price of gold would be $10,000 an ounce.
Gold versus the dollar. The currency war has already begun. Gold is stable, but its production is limited. On the other hand, the dollar, with no restriction in production, has lost its stability. The gold standard was discarded 40 years ago after the Nixon shock. Will the era of gold return?
So I don't see gold coming back anytime soon. But if we had a serious crisis and there was nothing else, people might grab for the gold standard. But remember, the gold standard has many flaws as well.
I do not see gold playing an official part of a formal payment system. It's not convenient to exchange. It's not as stable in value as a basket of national currencies.
I think there's a pretty good chance that the gold standard will come back, although timing is a very difficult thing to try to handicap. It may come as a result of policy, but in practical terms, it's probably going to be the marketplace that drives the gold standard back into widespread acceptance.
The new key currency that will follow the British pound of the 19th century and the dollar of the 20th century. The birth of a new key currency begins from people's trust. In the midst of the world economic crisis, we are at a point where we must decide the future key currency.
Gold actually is not a government decision. We use this as a money. I think gold in the history, it's been chosen by the market. People trust gold. So when the people trust that gold or silver, so the government just use that as the money. If that's the case, I think probably in the future or in the current world, probably we should let the market to choose which one is better solution for our current problem.
No one knows which currency to trust and which currency to choose as the key currency. But even at this moment, gold reflects humans' desire most accurately. A soft, yellow, sparkling piece of metal. It is gold that the universe created. But humans gave it power, honor, and immortality. And the destiny of gold changed. Gold has written history for thousands of years. And humanity abandoned gold 40 years ago. But gold has returned. Will the return of gold be a blessing or a disaster? We stand before gold once again.
Well, with increasing political instability inside the U.S. and with the aftermath of the economic meltdown, perhaps the days of the dollar are in decline. And as history has proven to previous empires, when the dollar is out, U.S. dominance around the world will also fade away. Well, that's a wrap for this week. But join me again here next time on Aperture. Goodbye for now.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
NATO and the European Union have given a cold reception to a Chinese peace roadmap for Ukraine. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Russia Today, the RT network, has covered this story and tells us more. The Western backers of Ukraine in the ongoing conflict with Russia have offered a reserved reaction to a Chinese proposal for bringing the hostilities to an end. The 12-point roadmap was published by the Chinese Foreign Ministry on Friday, 24th of February. NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg effectively brushed off the proposals, stating that Beijing lacks credibility to float such a settlement plan altogether. China doesn't have much credibility because they have not been able to condemn the invasion of Ukraine, Jens Stoltenberg told reporters while mentioning the close ties between China and Russia. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen offered a similar reaction, stating that the roadmap was, in effect, a vague set of principles rather than a concrete action for peace. She also accused China of already siding with Russia, despite Beijing maintaining a neutral position in the hostilities. You have to see them against a specific backdrop, and that is the backdrop that China has already taken sides by signing, for example, an unlimited friendship right before the invasion. So, we will look at the principles, of course, but we will look at them against the backdrop that China has already taken sides, Ursula von der Leyen said. Some individual members of the European Union have voiced their opinions on the roadmap as well. German government spokesman Wolfgang Büchner, for instance, said it included some important elements, but also lacked other positions, namely a demand for Russia to withdraw its troops from Ukraine. Poland, one of the top supporters of Kiev, provided a more positive reaction to the Chinese peace plan, with the Polish president Andrzej Duda stating it could help pave the way towards peace. "We cannot ignore such a great partner and such a great power as China," President Duda said. Unlike most Western countries, China has refused to condemn Russia's military operation in Ukraine and has not imposed economic restrictions on Moscow. Top Chinese officials have repeatedly said that Beijing wants to find a peaceful solution to the hostilities in Ukraine rather than fuel them through arming Kiev. The 12-point Chinese roadmap urged each side of the conflict to stay rational and to exercise restraint, whilst calling upon the international community to encourage all efforts to end the year-long hostilities. all parties should support Russia and Ukraine in working in the same direction and resuming direct dialogue as quickly as possible, so as to gradually de-escalate the situation and ultimately reach a comprehensive ceasefire agreement, the document said. China's Xinhua news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. China has called for international efforts to create conditions for the resumption of peace talks to resolve the Ukraine crisis. China, on Friday, 24th of February, released a paper stating its position on the political settlement of the Ukraine crisis, saying dialogue and negotiations are the only viable solution to the Ukraine crisis. China's call came on the first anniversary of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. The crisis has caused many casualties, displaced numerous people, aggravated geopolitical confrontation in Europe, intensified global energy and food shortages, and undermined regional and international security. The international community should stay committed to the right approach of promoting talks for peace. Help parties to the conflict open the door to a political settlement as soon as possible and create conditions and platforms for the resumption of negotiations. China will continue to play a constructive role in this regard, said the paper. All parties must stay rational and exercise restraint, avoid fanning the flames and aggravating tensions, and prevent the crisis from deteriorating further or even spiraling out of control. All parties to the conflict should support Russia and Ukraine in working in the same direction and resuming direct dialogue as quickly as possible to gradually de-escalate the situation and ultimately reach a comprehensive ceasefire arrangement, the paper added. 1 year into this conflict, there is still no prospect of a peaceful settlement. On the Ukraine issue, China's position boils down to supporting talks for peace. China's proposals reflect its consistent stance that it stands for peace and dialogue, said Ding Xiaoxing, director of the Institute for Eurasian Studies, China Institute of Contemporary International Relations. All measures conducive to easing the humanitarian crisis must be encouraged and supported, and parties to the conflict should avoid attacking civilians or civilian facilities, protect women, children and other victims of the conflict, and respect the basic rights of prisoners of war, the paper said. China opposes armed attacks against nuclear power plants or other peaceful nuclear facilities, said the paper, adding that the threat or use of nuclear weapons should be opposed and that nuclear proliferation must be prevented and the nuclear crisis avoided. China has offered economic solutions to the woes brought on by the Ukraine crisis, including facilitating grain exports, stopping unilateral sanctions, and keeping industrial and supply chains stable, said Li Ziguo, an expert with the China Institute of International Studies. Li Ziguo added, "The vast majority of countries hope for an early end to the crisis in Ukraine. China's proposals are in line with the general historical trend of peace and development and serve the interests of people globally, and more importantly, the interests of both Russia and Ukraine." Li Ziguo added, "Without a ceasefire, there are risks of intensified spillovers," said Li Yongquan, the head of the China Society for Russian, Eastern European and Central Asian Studies. Li Yongquan added, "Released at such a time, this paper carries heavy weight, and it's a document from a permanent member of the United Nations Security Council, namely China." Britain's The Guardian newspaper has also covered this story and tells us more. Western leaders have largely dismissed the peace plan for Ukraine laid out by the Chinese government, arguing that Beijing does not have the international credibility to act as a mediator in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. China's government called for peace talks whilst urging all parties to the conflict to avoid nuclear escalation and end attacks on civilians, in a statement which appeared to maintain Beijing's stance that the West was fueling the conflict in Ukraine, and which analysts dismissed as anodyne. The 12-point position paper on Ukraine was released on Friday morning, 24th of February, on the first anniversary of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. The paper, for which Ukraine was not consulted, was cautiously welcomed by Kiev, but criticised by US officials and some analysts who noted the growing ties between China and Russia. On Wednesday, China's top diplomat visited Moscow and pledged a deeper partnership between Beijing and Moscow. Speaking to reporters on Friday in Tallinn, Estonia's capital, NATO's Secretary-General Jens Stoltenberg said China doesn't have much credibility because they have not been able to condemn the invasion of Ukraine. Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the European Commission, said China had already taken sides in the Russia-Ukraine conflict.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Majh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Men and women, as human beings, are completely equal in Islam. This is part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with hundreds of prominent Iranian women in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on January 4th, 2023. There are a few other things, but unfortunately, I cannot go into detail about them. One is the issue of hijab. Hijab is obligatory in the religious laws. It is a religious law. It is a religious obligation. There is no doubt about the hijab being obligatory. Everyone must know this. Now, they may raise doubts about whether or not the hijab is necessary. But no, there is no doubt about it. It is a religious obligation that must be observed. However, those who do not fully observe the hijab should not be accused of being religious or against the revolution. No.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I've said this before. There was a time during one of my trips to other provinces where I mentioned this in a gathering with a number of religious scholars. Some scholars had gathered there. I said, why do you make accusations against certain individuals sometimes? This woman, for example, who has exposed some of her hair, is often referred to as having bad hijab. This should be called inadequate hijab instead. Her hijab is inadequate. Why do you accuse such people? When I came into this city, a large crowd came to greet me. Perhaps at least one third of the crowd was made of such women. They were shedding tears. You cannot say they are against the revolution. How can you say they are against the revolution when they come forward with this kind of enthusiasm and eagerness, and they take part in certain religious or revolutionary ceremonies? They are our own children. They are our daughters. I've repeated this on numerous occasions during the Eid al-Fitr prayers, in the Eid al-Fitr sermon, or in the ceremonies that are held in the month of Ramadan on the Qadr nights. I've seen pictures of this. I could not go there, but I would be shown pictures. And there were women who were covered in different ways in these ceremonies and were shedding tears. I envy them for shedding tears like that. I tell myself that I wish I could shed tears like that girl or that young woman. How can you make accusations against such a person? Yes, not observing the hijab properly or having inadequate form of hijab is not the right thing to do. But this does not mean that we should exclude these individuals from religion.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh,
think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahan Abbott, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
At one of Lebanon's local supermarkets, only a few items cost a bundle of Lebanese pounds. The country's cost of living crisis is taking a heavy toll on people, as 80,000 lira equal only $1.
As Lebanon enters a third year of a deepening economic crisis, basic necessities like food and medicine have become more expensive than ever before. It has become almost a daily struggle for some families to put food on the table.
The Western sanctions on the one hand and domestic corruption on the other hand have been affecting the situation, and it is the people who are suffering.
Many blame those in power for heeding to U.S. and Western control of monetary activity. People on the street say the increasing rate of the dollar is a major contributor to the crisis.
If the dollar became high, 1,000, the items more and more, not the real price. And you can see this in other supermarkets. You go, one supermarket is cheaper than others. And around 20,000-30,000. Why? So they don't no control. should be controlled, because really nobody can afford many things now in the supermarkets because it's high.